It's time for us to get started in here and continuing our class on the Christian and influence, understanding our role in that we have in influencing others in different situations. So we'll continue to develop this class. We talked last week about several different key aspects of influence, the first being character, a worthy example, and how that plays a role in us being able to be a positive influence on others. It's an obvious statement that you are an influence, right? No matter what you do, you have an influence. If we have good character, then we can be a positive influence in people's lives, right? And so that's what we're trying to be aware of and hone those kind of things, hone our abilities to have that. We also talked about the compassion needing to be a part of that. And we talked about various examples of compassion and concern and how that plays out and being an influence for others. And then also communication. At some point, we need to talk, right? We need to be able to communicate the message that's been given to us. And so we're going to take those three things and look at what it means to be an influencer. Have you heard the term, those that talk about influencers in today's society? Anybody heard of those influencers? All right, some of you are awake. All right, excellent. There are influencers now. Used to be, and still is to a degree, that sports, you know, you'd use big athletes, big names to sell Wheaties and to sell shoes and that kind of stuff. And that still happens. But even more so, we start to have influencers now that are not anybody necessarily hugely popular, not anybody that's kind of come off the radar out of nowhere. Influencer is those who have the power to affect purchasing decisions of others, right? And those are people who might make or break a certain product, and they also have a following. There's these things called social media, things like Twitter and Instagram and YouTube and things like that, various blogs. These are where you see people who have a following on these places, and you'll see people that have certain niche followings. So if there's somebody out there that only works on GeoMetros, and he has like this huge following of people who want to know about how to work on GeoMetros, and all the people that work on GeoMetros follow him, he's an influencer on what to do and not to do for GeoMetros. Obviously, an example, maybe not the best example. Maybe Mazda Miatas or something that might be a better example. Oh yeah, I know. It was just a dumb example. See if people are paying attention, Gary. Do you think it worked? Oh, do you really? 211, Gary? Yeah, you might be a micro-influencer, I think is the terminology. Yeah. Yep. Never mind. I'm going to leave that alone. You actually were an influencer this week. I used you as in it. Huh? I'll talk to you later. Jackie should have showed you if she didn't. You need to ask her. All right, I'm sorry, we got sidetracked there. All right, so influencers can influence class even. You look at what's going on in people's lives, and these people are involved in selling different things. And there's a bunch of different niche things that are out there. These are people that are marketing tools. So people, brands, gravitate towards these people and start using them to influence the market. Why are we talking about this, Josh? Well, there's a lot of people who are using their influence to sell things. And we're going to look at some ways that there are people who are influencers in the Bible, biblical influencers throughout tonight, the Old Testament, that were influences in their time and continue to be an influence on people. If we talk about biblical influencers, you might think Adam and Eve, they had an influence, right? And some others. Did Noah have an influence? A little bit. He had a little bit of an influence in the future. If we look at his character in Genesis chapter 6, 8, and 9, what does God say about Noah? But Noah found favor in the eyes of the Lord. These are the records of the generations of Noah. Noah was a righteous man, blameless in his time. Noah walked with God. Noah became the father of three sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. So if God's making this commentary about you, your character is probably pretty good, right? That's good. I'm not going to bring up the fact that everybody was so bad that maybe it was a low bar, but here is Here's the situation. He was a righteous man. God said he was righteous. And because of that, he began to be able to have an influence. We're going to come back to this one in just a second. But Peter talks about this in 2 Peter. What does 2 Peter chapter 2, verse 5 say about Noah's communication? This is an open book. 2 Peter chapter 2, verse 5. What did he say about Noah's communication? A herald of righteousness. Some might say a preacher of righteousness, a proclaimer of righteousness. How did Noah proclaim righteousness? Do we have any sermons from Noah? How do you think he proclaimed righteousness? By doing what God said, right? So here is Noah. God asks him, Noah, build an ark. And gives him the dimensions. And what we see is God talking. It's interesting that we don't really... Noah doesn't say anything until he curses Canaan. He doesn't say anything until he curses one of his sons. It's just a narrative. It's just God saying, Noah, or God said, Noah, do this, and Noah did it. And we see Noah being very obedient to God. Just the fact that he was building this ark in front of his neighbors and everybody, right? Out on his front lawn, he's building this ark, so to speak. Metaphor, obviously. Do you think that preached righteousness? Yes. He may have been a proclaimer. He may have been telling people about the things to come. He may have been doing that. We don't have record of that. But even just his life. So we don't have any record of verbal communication that he did, but we do see a lot of nonverbal communication. We see his obedience and that being him being a preacher of righteousness. Did Abraham have an influence in his time? Yeah, you can say yes, right? His character, if we look at him, look in Genesis chapter 12, verses 1 through 4. You can narrow this down if you want to. Now the Lord said to Abraham in verse 1 of Genesis chapter 12, go. Verse 4, so Abraham went. Right? If you want to narrow this down to Abraham's character, it might not have mattered where God asked Abraham to go. Right? The middle part's just filler, but we look here and we see the obedience of Abraham. Go forth from your country, from your relatives, from your father's house, to a land I'll show you. For us to move and go away from what we have as far as resources and a family and that kind of stuff, that's not so much a big deal for us today. Right? This happens all the time, where people move across country and that kind of thing. But it was a bigger deal then to journey out. When you journeyed out like that, you may never see those family members again. You're leaving and you never may ever see them again. It was a big deal. And he went. And he goes to a land, and he gives them this promise, I'll make you a great nation, I'll bless you, make your name great, and you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and the one who curses you, I will curse, verse 3. And in you, all the families of the earth will be blessed. So Abraham, in his obedience, those that were around Abraham were blessed. And we'll talk about... just his character and the promises that God made to him. Who was one that traveled with him, a relative of his? Lot. At one point, they had to separate. Why? Do you remember why they had to separate? They had too much stuff, too many animals to feed, too many mouths to feed. The resources in one place couldn't bear them. And that was... in part because Lot was blessed about being with Abraham. God said, you're going to be a blessing, Abraham. Do you know that really hasn't changed for us? We need to be a blessing in people's lives. Like Abraham was a blessing, we need to be a blessing in people's lives. In Genesis chapter 22, we have... more to speak about. God tested Abraham. What did God ask him to do? Isaac, right? To offer up Isaac. Sacrifice his son. This is the son he's been waiting on, but he does it anyway. He does it anyway. So we see the character in, and we'll come back to that in a moment, but we see the character in Abraham. Now, was Abraham perfect throughout his life? Did he ever do anything wrong? Yes, obviously he did some few things wrong. You know, to get into those, but here are things that he did right, and he was able to be influenced because of these things. Where do we see compassion, the compassion of Abraham? Can you think of something? God asked the question, should I let Abraham know what I'm going to do, the cities? Yes, so Abraham, you know, then verse 23, Abraham came near and said, will you indeed sweep away the righteous with the wicked? Do we see Abraham's compassion here for even the wicked? Now, this may be self-serving, because who does he know is in that area? Lot, right? But we see his compassion. He doesn't mention Lot here, but his concern was, will you sweep away the righteous with the wicked? And so we see his compassion for even those people. And famous phrase, will not the God of all the earth do what is right, is what God of Abraham's commentary about God. Going back to Genesis chapter 22, verse 8, what was Abraham's communication to Isaac when Isaac asked the obvious question, hey, Dad, we have the wood, and you know we're going to go to the place, but where's the sacrifice? What was Abraham's response? God will provide. Did he just learn that? Did Abraham just learn that? You know, that just, it popped up on his phone, somebody sent it to him with a nice picture, God will provide. He learned it that morning. Did he learn it that morning? He'd been learning it the whole time, since Genesis chapter 12, right? God's going to provide. He's always provided for me. He's always taken care of me. And so that was something he communicated to Isaac, and we see that play out, obviously, in that instance. If you look over in Hebrews chapter 11, verses 8 through 10, there were some things that Abraham was looking forward, way forward in understanding some things. By faith, Abraham, when he was called, obeyed, going out. By faith, he lived as an alien, verse 9. Verse 10, for he was looking for the city which has foundations, whose architect and builder is God. He led a people into understanding faith in God. Those who are faithful to God look for that city, and he's one of the first to go out and look for that city. And talks about Sarah as well here. And then over in verses 17 and 19, by faith Abraham, verse 17, when he was tested, offered up Isaac, right? He who had received the promise was offering up his only begotten son. Verse 18, it was he and to whom it was said, in Isaac all your descendants will be called. He considered that God is able to raise people even from the dead, from which he also received him back as a type. So we see Abraham being an example and communicating his faith by the actions that he took. And so Abraham was obviously one man of influence. Skipping around historically, Joseph. What speaks to Joseph's character? Genesis chapter 39, if you want to be thumbing your way that way. Genesis chapter 39, what were some things that spoke of his character? What's that? Yes, he accepted his brothers after all those years. We'll get to that. You're getting ahead of us. But if we look at chapter 39, it was evident about Joseph. The Lord was with Joseph, verse 2. So he became a successful man. Joseph found favor in the sight of the one, this master. And then that master's wife did what? Tempted him. What was his way of escape? After this is not just like the first attempt, right? This is several occasions. And the text tells us that he's in the house and there were no other men servants in the house. Reading between the lines, I feel like the wife kind of set up that scenario, right? She told everybody to leave, knowing that Joseph would come in at a certain time. That's just my, that's how that plays out on the telenovelas, on those kind of things. So that's my idea of what's going on. But we look at what's happening here. How did he get out of that scenario? He ran, but he didn't just like turn and beat feet right away. He gave her a speech, right? How can I do this against my God? And against my master. And so then he runs. And so he was still a man of character. He had compassion on those that had troubles with their dreams. What was it that in chapter 40, he interprets a dream? He was in charge of some men that were put in prison. And Pharaoh's he was actually in charge of them. And put in charge of them. In verse 6, when Joseph came to them in the morning, he observed them. Behold, they were dejected. And he asked his Pharaoh's officials that were with him in confinement, why are your faces so sad today? And, you know, they tell them their dreams, and he interprets their dreams. And so one continued to be sad. The other was obviously happy that he was going to be getting out soon. But we see his compassion there. Look over in chapter 43 when his brothers begin coming back because of the famine. There's this kind of cat and mouse game that he plays with his brothers. And you wonder as you're reading through it, what is he trying to do? What is Joseph trying to do with his brothers? Because his brothers obviously don't know who he is. In this particular text in chapter 43, verses 13 to 14, take your brother also arise and go to the man. And may God Almighty grant you compassion in the sight. And so in this text, the brother is taken. Joseph is asking for compassion, hoping that there's compassion on the person that's asking for their brother, for them to come. And knowing that if Benjamin was taken also, that he would be bereaved of all his beloved children. From Rachel, and so he pleads for compassion in verse 43, in verse 45, Joseph doesn't plead. Just making sure Joseph isn't the one, but Israel, their father, is asking for compassion, and we see that play out in several occasions. Joseph has to kind of step aside and regain composure after trying to hold back his tears after seeing his brothers. In this cat and mouse game, it goes back and forth, and they get goods, and then he hides money in their satchels like they stole it, so they get called back, and one gets left, and he hears the brothers talking about how can we leave this brother behind. Surely God knows what we did to Joseph, and Joseph had to go away and weep and then come back. And he's doing this, he's testing to see if the hearts of his brothers had changed. Because the hearts of his brothers were hard against him and sold him into slavery. Now, as he's receiving them back, the brothers are older, and he's testing to see, are they still hard-hearted individuals that sold him, or had they changed? And he sees over and over again that they changed. His brothers changed. And so we see that here. And then in chapter 45, Joseph, it says, could not control himself. And he tells them, to everybody else, to leave the room, his servants. And that's when Joseph wept so loudly that the Egyptians heard it and the household of the Pharaoh heard of it. And he told them, it's me, it's Joseph, right? So seeing this play out, we see his compassion, but we see his wisdom trying to see what's going on with his brothers. We see Joseph being an influence for his family. And Joseph, in that moment, tells them, this wasn't what happened was for the furtherance of our family and for kingdoms and for other things. Joseph became a bigger influencer, not just for his family, but for so many families because of what he did. We see, of course, his communication in interpreting dreams, as he interpreted Pharaoh's dream. But he not only interpreted Pharaoh's dream, but he gave Pharaoh a plan of action to use to protect the kingdom. And then that's what was put into place. And so Joseph was an influencer for so many people, not just for his own family, but for many, many people. Moses was an influencer. In Exodus chapter 2, Exodus chapter 2, verses 11 through 17, we see a scenario plays out where he kills an Egyptian guard, and when he tries to be a leader amongst his, amongst the people there, what do they say to him? Do you remember? In verse 14. So he kills this guard that was beating up some of the Hebrew slaves, and he hides him in the sand, which is convenient. There's lots of sand out there. And then he comes the next day, and there's two Hebrew people who are fighting with each other, and he tells them, hey, knock it off. He tries to have an influence on them. And what do they turn around and do? Do you want to kill us like you did the Egyptian? They call out his character right away, right? Who are you to say anything to us? We're just fighting. We're not killing anybody, right? And so now he flees because he knows this thing is known. It's out in the open, and he flees. And he goes to Midian, and he helps some ladies, against the ruffians at the well, and waters their animals, and then ends up marrying them. And so we see that play out. In Deuteronomy chapter 34, verse 10, what commentary do we have about Moses? What does it say about Moses in Deuteronomy chapter 34, verse 10? Since that time, no prophet has risen in Israel like Moses, whom the Lord knew face to face. And so we see the distinguishing factor with Moses as far as his character and how things played out for him. We see his compassion also play out similar to that of Abraham. God speaks to Moses in Exodus. And what does God say to Moses in Exodus chapter 32 concerning the people, beginning in verse 9? Have you ever dealt with anybody that's just super, super hard-headed? Some wives are shaking their heads. Yep. So the Lord said to Moses, I've seen this people, and behold, they are an obstinate people. Now then, let me alone, and my anger may burn against them, and I will destroy them, and I will make of you a great nation. Moses could have stepped aside and said, I 100% agree with you. These people are horrible. Why did you ever pick them? Because up to this point, they had not been, saints. They'd had their issues, right, even up to this point. And so Moses could have just stepped aside, stood there with God, and said, you know what? Yeah, have at it. But what did Moses do instead? What did Moses do?
He interceded.
He stepped up. Was God going to destroy the people? And was it Moses' conviction that turned the heart of God? Or was this more for Moses than it was for God? I'll let you decide that. But Moses stood up and spoke on their behalf and interceded for them. And God did not destroy the people. Now, after this, I'm sure Moses had days where he was like, why in the world did I stand up for these people, right? He might have had days later on. He was human. But we see his compassion play out here. And his communication. What was Moses' own opinion of his communication in Exodus chapter 4? Burning bush scenario, right? Burning bush. And sandals are off. He's in the presence of a holy God. God says, hey, you're going to do this. And Moses is like, I'm not that great a person. And God says, I'm going to be with you. And then he says, well, who are you? I mean, what's your name again? And he said, I am that I am. And he gives him powers. And then he says what in chapter 10, or chapter 4, verse 10? What is Moses' complaint about why he could not be the person that God wanted him to be? What's that? I can't speak well. Right? I'm hooked on phonics. I can't speak well. Moses said to the Lord, "Please, Lord, I have never been eloquent, neither recently, nor in time past, nor since you have spoken to your servant, for I am slow of speech and slow of tongue." God says what? Yeah, that's right. It's Aaron, right? But God's like, "I made your mouth. I can fix this, right? This, I can work with you." He's looking for excuses. And one of his excuses is, "I can't communicate. I'm not going to be able to communicate." When we see Moses' life, when he, and yes, Aaron plays a part in communication, but what do we see happen? Even in Egypt, what do we see happen? We see Moses begin to rise up, and we see Aaron begin to diminish. As Moses becomes more and more confident in his relationship with God and his obedience and what God can do with him, we see Aaron begin to diminish, to the point that it's ironic that he made that statement. "Well, I'm not eloquent of speech." What do we see him begin to do over and over again throughout these books? Speak, right? On behalf of God. Over and over again. He wrote these first five books. And Deuteronomy is essentially a collection of sermons before they go into the... Say, "Well, I can't speak very well." And then now he's saying... We see what he wrote and his communication that he had and what he played. He began to be obviously a huge influence and the reason why the people were to continue to go through and be faithful to God. And so that is Moses, in a very small nutshell, his influence on the people. Next at bat, David. What do we see about David's character in 1 Samuel 13? He was a man after whose own heart? That's right. God said, "I'm looking for a man after mine own heart." And David was that man. In 1 Samuel chapter 26, there's an instance in 1 Samuel. Look over in 1 Samuel. What happens in chapter 26, 22 through 25? David's on the run. You might have a heading in your chapter, but in this particular... He refuses to kill King Saul. This is the second time he refuses to kill King Saul. He will not kill God's anointed. "I'm not going to raise my hand against God's anointed." This is the second time that he could have killed this scoundrel Saul who was trying to kill him over and over and over again. Those around him are saying, "Hey, just kill him. He's right here before you. God's giving him into your hand." He says, I cannot do this thing. We see his character. On another occasion in 2 Samuel, we see his character. We don't have time to get into that situation. Compassion, we can see on several occasions, but look over in 2 Samuel chapter 9. 2 Samuel chapter 9. Have you heard about Mephibosheth? No, he was lame in both feet, right? That's what the text all the way through here, over and over and over again, says. By the way, he's lame in both feet. We see Mephibosheth. Mephibosheth is the last of whose descendants, of last of whose sons? Of Saul. Not only Saul, but Saul through Jonathan, right? His friend Jonathan. And so everybody, you know, it becomes known that David's looking for the last descendants. And normally when kings are looking for the descendants of other kings, what are they trying to do? Yeah, we're trying to kill, make sure we're getting rid of all the opposition. But in this case, what does he do for Mephibosheth? He brings him into his home. He returns the estate of Saul to Mephibosheth and his servants to him and says, "You can eat at my table anytime you want." Eating at the king's table was sort of a big deal, okay? And so he was able to eat at the king's table. So he had that compassion there. Is there any time where David's communication was rather encouraging? What do we think of as far as David's communication? Then go ahead and put the Psalms up here. He communicated a lot, right, throughout the Psalms and the writings. But on one particular instance, what is there a speech that he's famous for? There's this guy, Goliath. Look in 1 Samuel 17, 34. But David said to Saul, "Your servant was tending his father's sheep when a lion and a bear came and took a lamb from the flock." And this is when Saul's saying, "Hey, you're not able to go against this giant, this Philistine, and fight." But David said, "Your servant was tending his father's sheep, and he took a lion and a bear and came and the lamb from the flock. And I went out after him and attacked him, rescued it from his mouth. And when he rose up against me, I seized him by his beard." How many of you have grabbed a lion by its beard? Raise your hand. Okay. "And struck him and killed him. Your servant has killed both lion and bear, and this uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them, since he has taunted the enemies of the living God." And David said, "The Lord, who delivered me from the paw of the lion and the paw of the bear, he delivered me from the hand of this Philistine." So Saul said, "Here you go, here's my kingdom." Essentially was the response. Because if David lost, they lost everything. This is a big roll of the dice. So here's David's speech to a king. A shepherd boy to a king. He's going to be like the lion, he's going to be like the bear. Would you risk everything on a shepherd boy? That must have been a great speech. His communication, he communicated his conviction. His men followed him because of his conviction. Those that knew him knew and talked about him as a valiant man said he fights like a bear separated from her cubs. He was a man of character and compassion. And, of course, did David mess up? 2 Samuel chapter 11 and 12, did he mess up? Yes, he did. But when it was revealed to him by Nathan, "Thou art the man," he said, "I have sinned. I have sinned." And we see his character again. If we have time, we'll see if we can get through Daniel. But Daniel was one of character, Daniel and his compatriots. In Daniel chapter 1, what did they decide not to do? They were taken captive. They were given new names. They had to learn a new language. What did they decide not to do? They were going to be given the king's food, and they said, "Yes, finally," right? Hot pockets. No, they said, "No, we're not going to eat. We're not going to eat the king's food." And they grew. So their character, they maintained their dietary laws. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, as we know them, when it was time to bow the knee, they spoke rather strongly to the king. "O king, may you live forever. We're not careful to answer you on this matter. Our God will save us, but even if he doesn't, we're not going to bow the knee to you." That was one of the first mic drops, by the way, officially. And so their character stayed strong. When they made the law that you couldn't pray, Daniel, the day and the moment that he found that they had written the law that he couldn't pray, you know what he did? He prayed anyway, just like he always did. The kingdom, if the government says, "You can't do this thing," we're going to do it anyway. But that never happens today, so don't have to worry about that. Was he compassionate? In Daniel chapter 9, yes, he was. He was compassionate in his prayer. Guys, if you have 5 minutes, read that prayer and read God's response. The angel comes and says, as soon as you started praying, God started making things happen. And he had that whole prayer. Anyway, that's cool, especially considering tonight. He communicated God's message, obviously. And lastly, just real quick, guys, are we have anything in common with these people? Who were people who were shepherds, who were kings, who were prophets, who were average people? Do we still need to do these same kind of things? Are we still these examples? Yes, we are. We still need to do these things. We still are people of God that need to be examples, that always need to have compassion, and we have the best message for mankind, better than any message, and we get to carry that message. Thank you very much for your time tonight.